Hello, everybody, and welcome to a Thursday edition of the PHLY Eagles Show. I'm Zach Berman here with Rich Hoffman, Julia Hoff back in the studio, and a big day here at PHLY. The Anthony Gargano Show started this morning, so actually the noon slot means we're batting third, which is a good change of pace. It was awesome to have Anthony on. Enjoyed the show. Hope everyone checked it out and will continue to check it out. But I mentioned batting third because it's the tired cliche that this was supposed to be opening day. It's not opening day. So we adjusted. We're opening up the mailbag. And I'm pumped to hear Rich's analysis on a lot of that. So Rich, I was about to say good morning. Good afternoon. We're at 12:02 now. How's it going?
Zach, I'm doing great. I'm pro opening day getting moved back a day. I know why they did it. Well, they want to, yeah. Huh?
Well, let's hear this. I'm curious.
I don't like the day off in between, like, you know, especially if the Phillies win. I want some more, man. I want, you know, I've had 3-4 months without baseball. Let's get some more going. So if we wait one day, yeah, get it going, have a normal weekend series, that's fine by me.
I like that Friday built in, though, for the rain delay, right? Like, you don't want, sure, you don't want to go to opening day and then it getting washed out. I've covered my share of opening days where they're trying to squeeze it in, and it should be a nice day. It's like a sign of renewal. Spring is starting. And so I like the fact that they pushed it back, and I'm eager to watch it tomorrow.
Wait a minute. You've covered baseball? I'm not sure I knew this. When did you cover opening days?
So when I was at the Star Ledger, covering the New York Giants, and during the off seasons, then I would pitch in, help with both the Mets and the Yankees. When I was at the Washington Post, I was covering college sports. I would help out with Washington Nationals opening days. I haven't been a beat writer for baseball, but I've spent a good amount of time in MLB ballparks, in those clubhouses, loitering, if you will, waiting for someone to speak. So I like the pomp and circumstance sometimes of opening day.
Look at you, jack of all trades. I didn't even know that. That's funny. Yeah, look, it's great. I'm so happy baseball is back, and I understand why they had the day built in. But this works out. You know, it'll be a little windy tomorrow, but we got a nice weekend series. I am going on Saturday. Jason Kelsey and Fletcher Cox throwing out the first pitch, apparently, although Jason Kelsey said his elbow or his shoulder doesn't work, yeah, one of the two. Yeah, I believe that. So, yeah, be good to see them.
Yeah, I'm actually going to Sunday's game. Shout out to Vince, helped me out there. But I'm eager to see this team this year. I know we're an Eagles show, but let's do a quick 30 seconds here while we're on the topic, because you were down in spring training. I've only seen them on television, reading all the coverage in PHLY and elsewhere of the Phillies. What's your expectation for this season?
In fairness, I was just drinking beers at the Tiki bar. I wasn't like interviewing Bryce Harper, asking him what he was going to do this year. I think most people, when you read the coverage, think they're going to come in second. They think the Braves and the Dodgers are kind of this tier above everybody, but they think they're going to be a clear wild card team. I would want, and I was talking about this with our friend Shil Kapadia last week, can we get to like Labor Day and still be in the race? Can the NL East still be a question, even if you're 2-3 games back? That would be my hope. My guess is that, Zach, like, we've been here and we've kind of done that. And unless there's like some crazy injuries going on, low 90s, you know, and they're going to be back in the same spot they always are. And I'm sure the Dodgers and the Braves, after winning 130 games or whatever they win, they're going to have to play these guys in a 5-game series, which is not a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd say starting the season off with the Braves will give us a good sense of what the Phillies are this year. I am pumped. I got my fantasy baseball auction tomorrow night, so I've been doing prep work on every single prospect and rookie in I could possibly get it for at a bargain. So I'm ready for the season.
What, one more thing on this? How many fantasy teams do you have across every sport? I know you always talk about the fantasy basketball team. Yeah. I know Bo talks about the fantasy baseball team, football, obviously, too. Like, how many are you, do you have at one calendar year?
That's a good question. I would say 8 or 9. I used to have a college basketball league I was in. I just couldn't, I couldn't keep up because it was like, you know, it's not on a website. So a lot of it's done manually and things like that. And that just, you know, I got married, had kids. So it was a little too much near the college basketball league. So I can't, the last time I had Lonzo Ball as a freshman, he was huge for me, but yes, but
it's good year. Yeah, there you go.
Big auction league where you have a minor league system. You have guys on 3-year contracts. And so on a given night, like if you ask me, you know, what did Bobby Witt do last night, or when's Braylon Bell starting for the next game, you know, or who are the Guardians calling up next week? Like I can give you that answer. So I'm a nerd when it comes to this stuff, but I love it. That's the great thing about sports, and it gives me an excuse to follow everything. So
that's I also think too, even though I do think 8 or 9 leagues is a lot, I'm sure you do it with a lot of your friends to, you know, stay in touch and kind of stay together and stuff like that. So I definitely think there is a benefit for that.
Oh, no, I do it as an investment. No, I'm joking. Yeah. It is a way to stay in touch, but I'm in those leagues to try to win. Yeah. I'm kidding. We were going to do the opening day theme tomorrow, and let's hope we still do that tomorrow, but we pivoted and we went with the mailbag. And look, we don't need to relitigate this with Bo in terms of his feelings on the mailbag. I love it because it gives me a chance to, or gives us a chance rather, to see what's on the mind of fans. But further, I really wanted to kind of get into some of these big roster questions with you. We're at an interesting point in the league calendar where we are after the major wave of free agency and before the draft. And Bo and I are going to go deep into every position in this draft during the month of April. But now's the time where you kind of assess where you are. Is there positions where you're concerned about? Are there roster competitions? Things like that. And that was so we categorized the questions that came in. And it was interesting to see what was on the minds of those fans, because I think the first question kind of showed what the biggest question that I keep hearing. And this is from Joe Connors. And it is, when is it panic time with the cornerbacks? So I ask you, when is it panic time with the cornerbacks?
So for me, and again, I don't know exactly how he thinks he's going to be able to do here. For me, it's after the draft is when it's panic time. And if they have not settled that position. Now, I'm curious because in recent years, I am thinking of like the Darius Slay trade. They have traded some middle round draft capital. They didn't do it with L'Jarius Sneed in the past couple weeks, even though that was a pretty similar trade to the Slay deal. And then you pay him a bunch of money. I'm curious what you think. Is this a draft investment most likely, or is it still like a trade? Is it still, you know, trying to get, you know, a younger veteran and somebody who's a little more proven?
Yeah, well, I still think a trade is on the table here, or in, it's a possibility, especially for a big name corner. Should one become available, I think that's a spot where the Eagles would give up significant draft inventory and significant money to kind of give yourself a building block. But it's not trading for a placeholder. It's trading for a building block. Other than that, I do think the draft is a place to look. Maybe in the first round, I would think round 2 is a good sweet spot for that. I keep hearing it that the Eagles haven't drafted a corner in the first round since 2002. I can tell you, in my time covering the team, they were really interested in, if you just look at the last 3 years, right? 2 years ago, or well, 3 years ago, they were interested in the J.C. Horn, Patrick Surtain group in the draft. The year after that, they were interested in potential trade up if like Derek Stingley or Sauce Gardner had slipped. Last year, I think that if Jalen Carter didn't fall their way, I think someone like Christian Gonzalez might have been of interest to them, or a player like that. So they're certainly not opposed to taking a corner in the first round. It's the way that it's fallen. And this is a good cornerback draft class. So I can frankly see a situation where the Eagles take one relatively early, first round or second round. I did a mock draft in all PHLY last week for the diehards, where I had Cooper DeJean as their first round pick.
What do you make of their current depth? I guess my main thing, because I know you and Bo talked about it last week, and I'm pretty sure you guys said something along the lines of, yeah, their 2-5 is probably a little bit better than it's been in recent years if you go all the way down, especially if Isaiah Rodgers gets reinstated here. There are a couple swings. I guess I just feel so unsettled about James Bradberry at this point. And, you know, like, frankly, if you had this group right now, I would be hoping that Kelee Ringo got the job. I just don't know if relying on Kelee Ringo is the right move for these guys. I would like one more, like at least a swing in the draft, you know, whether it's a second round pick, a third round pick, I would like one more guy to push Kelee Ringo and say, like, all right, if Kelee Ringo beats this guy out, and I'm assuming Bradberry is not a part of the equation here. I could be wrong, you know, because of his salary that he's owed. So that's the way I would view it. I would like after the draft, but I do understand that, hey, you know, maybe after the draft, they swing a trade.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I don't think Bradberry is one of these guys who you kind of put into ink in terms of making the 53. I think this is a wait and see with Bradberry. I don't think they just immediately turn that over to Ringo, like you mentioned. I think that there's going to be someone there who's not slotting into that 3-5 spot, who's kind of slotting into that 2-3, maybe even like a 1A. And we'll get to that in some of the trade possibilities. But I would keep your eyes open. And I'm talking Eagles fans here, not necessarily you. I would tell Eagles fans, keep your eyes open. I think this is a position where the Eagles will take a swing. I know some people are moderately surprised that they weren't involved in Legarius Sneed, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're going to be in should a corner become available. And that kind of leads us to some of these next questions. I also want to give a shout out there. My father-in-law is watching this with my son. When it says, hey there, dad, that's my father-in-law. That's not my son's my son is that's not my son. That's my son writing it. And I should also mention, I should give my father-in-law a shout out. I'm at his place here. These are his golf clubs behind me. I've never golfed in my life, so I don't want to give the misconception that that I know what I'd be doing if I picked up a golf club. So here you go. This is the next question. This is an interesting
one. Wait a minute. You've never golfed in your life. You've never stepped on a course, never swung a club. Driving range.
Well, never. I've stepped on a course to cover it.
No. With a club in hand.
Yeah. With a club in hand. No, I've played mini golf. And I enjoyed mini golf, but no, I've gone to like Top Golf a few times. But that's me kind of like pulling out a baseball swing and I'm like Happy Gilmore out there, you know, trying to hack a ball. I've never golfed. I keep hearing that I'm missing out from a competitive perspective, from a social perspective. I see people saying ZB is a peculiar character. I kind of like, look, if golf was the type of thing you can knock out in 90 minutes, then it's, okay. Yeah. But, you know, I love my job. I work really hard at it. And then I have a 6 and 5 year old, and
you love your 9 fantasy teams too.
Yeah. So if I have free time on a Saturday, I'm spending time with them more than at the golf course. But I imagine at some point I will probably golf.
Well, especially considering how in you get to things, like it seems like once you pick up a hobby or you do something, you're all in. Unfortunately, golf might be staying away from that probably is a good thing because that gets you're playing against yourself, right? Like if you love the idea of self-improvement and just trying to get better in these kind of different ways and working on your swing, it can become addictive. I do agree with you. I golf a lot. It does take a long time. It takes 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday. And yeah, that's a lot of time.
And you're probably gonna roll your eyes when I say this. I'm a huge fan of the JJ Redick podcast, and sure. I've heard how like obsessed he's become with golf post basketball. And it seems to me, and perhaps this is just because I'm influenced by the JJ Redick podcast, it seems to me no one is like just ambivalent toward playing golf. It's like you once you do it, you become like obsessed with this golf culture, and I'm not ready for that plunge quite yet.
He is one of my favorite players I've ever covered, and just getting in the weeds and talking about basketball with him was awesome. And you're kind of seeing it on his podcast now. He has that new podcast with LeBron that's blowing up too. I could have told him that once he started to play golf, it would just become a ridiculous obsessive thing, because that was a guy who the way he worked on his jump shot and the way he kind of studied the game analytically, like while he was playing it, was you could see it coming. So, yeah.
Before we get to our first break, I do want to get to this next question here, because this kind of it ties into what we just spoke about. And we'll actually combine these next two. The first one being Denver calls and gives you a one-time take-it-or-leave-it offer. Patrick Surtain in exchange for number 22 overall and number 53 overall. Surtain and his agent will accept a five-year, $120 million extension. So you're talking about, you know, a pretty significant deal here, $24 million a year contract. If the trade is accepted, what is your answer?
So I'm gonna spin this back to you, just because I'm not sure about the where does that monetary commitment, where does that rank? Where does 22 and 53? I know some people have mentioned that for Surtain, but they have not mentioned 53. It's mostly just been the first round pick when I've also seen it. Look, I would love to have him. He seems like a great player. He's already part of the All City Network as well. So I think we could probably just transfer him over to the Eagle show. You and Bo could have your Fletcher replacement. Look, I would love that. But Zach, I guess my question here is that, like, at some point, the Eagles are going to have to go cheaper at some of these positions, right? Like, and I don't just mean, I mainly just mean money, like draft capital, you know, whatever. I would love to have him. So I think I would probably say no to that. That seems like too much, two swings at a player. But obviously, he's very good. What do you think?
Yeah, that's actually, in terms of draft comp, I would be willing to do it. I mean, ideally, you only do it for your first round pick, right? Giving up 53 makes it extraordinarily expensive. You know, but look, Patrick Surtain, he turns 24 next week, or I'm sorry, next month rather. He's still really young. He is, you talk to people in the league, they say he's the best corner in the league. He's someone that the Eagles scouted extensively. He's a blue chip player. And I've said this time and time again. I think, this is not a bold take. You win with A players. You win with blue chip players. And I like paying A players A money. I don't like paying B players A money. Now, a $24 million a year contract, that would make him the highest paid corner in the league by a significant margin. No one's making more than, I think, $21 million a year, right? So you're not just resetting the market. You're like, you know, if you're resetting the market and then some. Look, I don't know if that's the contract that I would sign him to. I would probably want it in that 22-23 range, but I would give up significant draft capital for him. Cornerback is a hard position to nail down, and he is an elite player. He is so young that you're getting like the prime of his career. And yeah, selfishly, I would love if he takes that Fletcher Cox seat next year and we have him in every week and, you know, we can pepper him with questions. So, I would try to massage that second round pick and push, you know, the Eagles don't have a third. Maybe there's different things you can do there. But look, Patrick Surtain's the guy who everything I hear is he's not available. I will also say that if the Denver Broncos want to trade up for a quarterback and they want to get up into the top five, how are they doing it? Are they going to get, you know, they gave up multiple first round picks to get Russell Wilson, and then to get Sean Payton. Okay. Now you're going to give up multiple first round picks again for a quarterback. Like, if you trade Surtain, you get a first rounder there, you can package that and you have draft inventory over the next few years. That's something that I think could make sense for Denver, unless they just have a hard no on Surtain. But that does tie into, and we can continue the trade talk here with the next question, which is, this is kind of a different framework. And this is one, actually shout out to Bo, because he had recommended this too, but with 3YRAC00N says Reddick for AJ Terrell, who says no? I'm proposing that to you. Who says no? Reddick for AJ Terrell.
I don't know who says no, Zach. I think the Falcons definitely could use another edge rusher, an elite player in Hassan Reddick. They are certainly going for at least playoff contention with this Kirk Cousins deal that they have made in the offseason. So I think this is an interesting framework because we have talked about the potential trade for Hassan Reddick, but we've only talked about it in terms of draft capital as the return, right? Like you are getting a first round pick back, a second round pick, whatever it might be. And we have also talked about potentially trading for a corner, but that's using your draft capital. But like at this point, the Eagles seem like they're at a stalemate with Reddick in terms of how much they want to pay him. Derek Gunn had that report the other day. Yep. We have not combined those two ideas though. What if you just trade Reddick for the corner? I don't know. I think it's certainly an interesting interesting option. And like if you're going to trade, you know, a second round pick or a first round pick for Surtain or a third round pick for, you know, a Darius Slay type in a couple months, whoever that might be, why not just combine them both? So I do like the idea of it.
Yeah, I like the idea. I think Atlanta says no here now. Pass rushers are more valuable than corners. They're both premium positions. Hassan Reddick is older. I still think he's an elite type player. AJ Terrell's going to have to get paid too, right? He's eligible for a new deal. The Falcons need edge rushing help. You know, you look at their depth chart. They have Arnold Ebeke from Penn State, their second round pick 2 years ago. He's kind of like their top edge rusher, if you will. They have Lorenzo Carter as well. But that's a position where, like, for instance, I can see the Falcons taking Dallas Turner in the first round. But if they run into contract trouble with AJ Terrell, that's the perfect deal. And I agree with you. Like, if you're not getting what you want for Hassan Reddick in terms of draft comp, think about player comp or think about draft swaps, things of that nature. The other part too is Reddick has to get the number that he wants to get in a trade. In a new contract. But if this is one that's on, I think the Falcons, to answer the question succinctly, I think the Falcons say no. But if the Falcons would say yes, that is a deal I would do. And it's an easy deal, I think, to spin because you could, if they traded Hassan Reddick for like a third round pick, Eagles fans, and rightfully saying, why are you trading maybe your best defensive player for a mid round pick, right? When all you talk about is the importance of edge rushers. If you trade it for a top young corner, then certainly it makes sense. It's you just traded Bryce Huff. Now you get AJ Terrell. There was no corner on the market like AJ Terrell. So what you did was you signed one of the top edge rushers on the market. Then you trade for one of the top young corners in the league. That would be like a terrific offseason move for the Eagles to make.
It'd be fun too. We need more player for player trades in the NFL.
Oh yeah.
It'd be fun. A little challenge trade.
Yeah. I actually, a little flex here. When the first story I ever wrote on Howie was about his penchant for player trades. It was in the, I wrote it for the New York Times back in 2012 in the spring, actually this time of year, because I finished interviewing him for that story and I drove down to Camden Yards to cover a Yankees versus Orioles game. I remember that.
You're such a baseball scribe. It's unbelievable.
So I was, that was a fun story to do. And he was ahead of his time in terms of trades. Now that trade would be a big pop, right? If the Eagles did it. And let me tell you about big pops. Okay. You like that transition, huh?
I love it. Yeah.
Because Ollie Pop, you saw it on the set today with Anthony. We're so thrilled that we're working with Olipop here. They have a big recent launch in Wawa stores. You're going to want to get it. They have two new flavors debuting in Wawa, Classic Root Beer and Strawberry Vanilla. My wife loves the orange flavor. I got to bring that home. And the great thing about Olipop is that it's the world's first functional soda with a classic soda taste and the benefits of plant-based fiber, prebiotics, and other botanical ingredients to support gut health. Olipop is a new kind of soda with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar and 9 grams of fiber per can. I told you that they're in Wawa now. Almost every American has some sort of relationship with soda from their childhood. Some people grew up drinking it all the time, then they quit. And some people are still addicted and they're trying to quit. Well, Olipop's the answer for you because it uses functional ingredients that combine the benefits of prebiotics and plant fiber and botanicals to support your digestive health, which is important because 90% of Americans consume more than the USDA's daily recommended added sugar intake, and sweetened beverages like soda are the leading source of added sugars in the American diet, while Olipop is a much lower sugar than conventional sodas with only 2 to 5 grams of sugar. You know, the vintage cola, Rich, I'm telling you, has just 2 grams of sugar as compared to a regular Coca-Cola, which has 39 grams of sugar. The orange squeeze, it has 5 grams of sugar compared to the orange Fanta, which has 44 grams of sugar. So use the code PHLY. You get 20% off your next Olipop order. The discount only applies to one-time orders, not to subscription orders. But Olipop is sold online, drinkolipop.com. We're on Amazon. It's available in almost 30,000 retailers nationwide, including, and I emphasize this, Wawa, plus Target, Sprouts, Wegmans, ShopRite, and GoPuff. And then I also want to tell you, we talked about opening day. All right, if you're trying to get opening day, trying to go to a game this weekend or in the next few days or weeks, there's one place you need to turn, and that's Game Time. I've been talking about Game Time since the show started. It's because it's my preferred ticketing app. That's where I go when I'm trying to find tickets at the last minute. And there have been times when I've been frustrated trying to buy tickets to a game, especially early in the MLB season when there's all those interest and everyone wants to go. Well, Game Time is now an authorized ticket marketplace of Major League Baseball and makes getting tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the first pitch, with killer last minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and their lowest price guarantee, Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying MLB tickets. I can assure you that I will be on that app in these next few weeks looking at Game Time, looking at Phillies tickets. And the great thing is they have these easy-to-find MLB tickets for every kind of event in your area, and I can see what the diamond looks like from my seat. So in the app, so if I'm sitting upstairs, behind right field, let's say, I can see exactly what it's going to look like. They have last minute deals. You can save up to 60% on buying last minute tickets for sports, comedy, concerts, and theater near you. The lowest price guarantee. And I mentioned opening day for a specific reason. They have this great promo right now where you can take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. For a limited time, all users get $20 off any MLB purchase of $150 or more in the Game Time app with code FIRSTPITCH. Terms apply. That's code FIRSTPITCH for $20 off from March 25th to April 14th only. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. So let's roll along here with the next one here. And this is also cornerback. Which corner prospect would project best to both start in the slot this year and take over for Slay as cornerback number one in the future? So I'll jump in quick and then we can kind of bounce this idea off each other. And we also want to kind of get through as many questions as we can. The answer to this in terms of the versatility, I think, is Cooper DeJean. That's what jumps out to me about DeJean. He's the corner from Iowa. He was an All-American last year. He can play corner. He can play slot. He can even play safety in a pinch. Athletically, if he was at the combine, he was expected to test off the charts. And I think he's really intriguing for that. If you're looking at the top corner in the draft, Terrion Arnold, I think from Alabama, some people would say that Mitchell, Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo, the best corner in the draft. There could be inside outside versatility there. I don't think, frankly, you're drafting a cornerback early on to start in the slot. I think you're drafting a cornerback early on to start outside. And then, you know, opposite of Slay, and then kind of maybe Ringo takes over for Slay next year, or he competes with Ringo. I think the slot corner, you're probably thinking more like if you're taking one in the second round, you're taking one in the fourth round. I'll throw a name. I've talked about this, Mike Sanistrill.
Oh yeah. I'm all in on Sanistrill.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think? Did you see that? The playoffs with Michigan making all those plays.
Totally. And even the Ohio State game, I think a couple years ago too. Now look, I don't watch too much college football, Zach, not like you. I might be golfing instead of watching college football. But anyway, Michigan was one of the best teams over the past couple years. And I feel like that guy was just making big plays every time. Right. And, you know, like tough physical player. He was like a leader on that team. I am very in on drafting him as slot corner. Unfortunately, I do see him getting mocked pretty highly at this point. Like, you know, what was Avante Maddox? He was a fourth round pick.
Fourth round pick. Yep.
So it seems like you can get some decent slot corners in the third round and the fourth round, you know, find that archetype of player they can drop. And Avante Maddox was pretty ready to play right away as well. So I don't know if you take Sam Ristill with your second round pick. That might be a little bit too high for my taste, but that's one of their biggest needs. And I do think it's interesting because we're going to talk about the offensive line in a minute here, where they do have the option to kind of draft a player for the position they don't project them to be long-term on both sides of the ball. But I'm with you. Like, if you were drafting a corner in the first round, I would hope that guy is starting on the outside. But to answer your question, yeah, it seems like Cooper DeJean has the chance to be, you know, whether it's a safety, whether it's a slot corner, he's the guy who probably has the most versatility there. The rest of these guys are, you know, Quinion Mitchell and like Nate Wiggins. These guys are long outside corners who project to be out there.
I do want to get this super chat in real quick. All City/PHLY Combine happens. Who goes number one overall? We appreciate the contribution real time. I'm not sure if is this referring to the player guests that we have, or is this referring to the hosts?
No, this is definitely referring to the writer or the hosts and the writers and the personnel.
So let's stick to PHLY real quick here. You know what? Renee was a Hall of Fame soccer player at LaSalle. Yeah.
Renee is beating us in pretty much all athletic testing, I think.
Yeah, so I'm jumping in on Renee as the top pick. I hear you're a great jump shooter. Bo's going to be insulted that, but Bo's not number two. Who's your answer there? Who's, if we agree Renee's number one, who's the number two pick?
Maybe Kyle. He was a soccer player. I know that at some point. But Kyle and I have had a lot of conversations over our writing careers about how washed up we are now, Zach. And frankly, I was a decent high school basketball player, but I was like the Larry Bird type. I was a basketball player. I wasn't necessarily an athlete. Now, in fairness, I'm going to take a little bit of a dig at our staff. I might be the second or third overall pick due to age, absolutely. Huge flex to be behind Renee and ahead of everybody else in our company in the combine. But maybe we should set that up. I mean, I think it would be funny. I think our listeners would get a kick out of us kind of pulling a hamstring, trying to run the 40. I think that could be some pretty good content, but I think it would be a pretty depressing watch too. It would kind of be gallows humor.
I had gym class with Julia back in the day, so I'm picking her on my team as well. All right, so let's circle back here. We're actually going to jump over to the next question. I'll answer it quickly because I do want to get to the offensive line. The next question is: what are the biggest needs heading into the draft? Which one has the highest pick? How does Isaiah Rodgers fit into things? The biggest needs, I'll just say this real quick. I think corner is the biggest needs when you look at like the short term, the long term. And then, you know, there's other spots on the roster, like linebackers always a need, safety, you know, like they're still figuring things out. But then the offensive line, long-term need, right tackle is a huge need for them. You don't know how much longer Lane Johnson's going to be playing. Isaiah Rodgers hasn't been cleared yet. I'm expecting him to be reinstated, and he is in the Eagles' plans. Now, he hasn't played football in a year, but he's someone that the Eagles Jeffrey Lurie said this. He's part of the Eagles' plans, but he needs to be reinstated first before that happens. You good jumping onto the offensive line or anything you wanted to add to this one?
I did want to add one more thing to that.
Okay.
And you listed all the needs that I thought too. I also think third receiver, if Jalen Hurts is willing to throw that guy the football to that could be another position. Here's one thing though. If Hassan Reddick is on his way out, what about edge rusher?
Yeah. You know what? They're paying Bryce off $17 million. They just gave, or they renegotiated Josh Sweat's deal to bring him back to make sure he's on the team. Nolan Smith was their first round pick last year. I mocked him in the first round. Just want to make that clear. But he was there. He was their first round pick last year. They need Nolan Smith to make a jump. You know, Brandon Graham's back for year four. So yeah, if you can never have enough good edge rushers, but Bryce Huff's being paid to be a major contributor. If Bryce Huff's not like a top of the roster player, that's problematic for this defense. So I would say, yeah, you can always add an edge rusher, but between Huff, Sweat, Nolan Smith as your top three, and then Brandon Graham number four. They have Zach Bond, who they like as an edge rusher.
Well, that's true, Bond too.
I think there's numbers there. But the reason I was speaking this long is I want to get to this next question, because this is one that I've heard asked a few different ways, and this is a big topic, and I'm curious your thoughts, and I'll get to mine. The offensive line intrigues me. Any chance they consider Dickerson at center? Not only did he play it at Alabama, he talked about taking over. Making the line calls on the field, which would seem natural for the center. Also, as offensive line and first round target, if the position of need is a guard. So you first here, and then I will jump in with my thoughts.
So here is my thing with that whole calculus on who to put where on the offensive line. Cam Jurgens was a center in college as well, and look, we're going on a small sample in games that don't actually matter, but he looked pretty good in the preseason when he played center a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Last season, again, he was banged up. He was playing out of position, but he did not look great at guard down the stretch. Like his play slipped. I don't know if that was injury. Hey, it might have been his first year in the NFL too, and he'll just continually get better. On the other hand, Dickerson has played guard at a very high level for a couple years here. Eagles just gave him a contract because of that. So I think for the sake of continuity and trying to maximize every position, you put Jurgens at center and see, okay, were his problems last year just because he was playing out of position? Like he did not play right guard in college. Is he an actual center, or are there kind of bigger issues with him? So that's how I would look at that. I don't think they need to be spending first round picks on guards. I would say that, like on a specific guard, especially because when you look at the, you know, like the top 50 available, those lists, there aren't really too many guards that slot up that high. I think the ideal situation for the Eagles, and this is probably how they think, would be finding the tackle of the future.
Mm-hmm.
But potentially saying that, you know, those comments about Tyler Steen were pretty interesting this week. Didn't play over Sua Pettit last year. At least giving him a chance to start at guard. And if that player can start at guard, then you're not wasting a spot. Then that player could play an important position for you, but also be, you know, learning from Lane Johnson, lining up right next to him. And whenever Lane says, okay, I'm done, then you slot that guy over. I think that is probably the ideal scenario. And for somebody like me who is worried about, oh man, you're going to draft a tackle in the first round and just put him on ice for a couple of years here. Like, I hope Lane doesn't retire in the next couple of years. How does that work when you were kind of all in and trying to have a Super Bowl roster? That would be kind of a nice compromise, right? Because you're getting that guy on the field and he's producing for you.
Yeah. I'm not expecting Landon Dickerson to move over. And I think, by the way, the contract's a clue of this. The highest paid center in the league last year was Kelsey at like $14.5 million a year, right? Landon Dickerson's getting what, $20 million a year thereabouts,
a lot
more, right? That's what top guards go for. That's not what top centers go for. They'd be paying their starting center $6 million more than what they paid Jason Kelsey. That doesn't make sense. Like that's not. They signed Landon Dickerson to be an elite guard. He's going to be an elite guard. They drafted Cam Jurgens to be a center. Cam Jurgens played guard last year because Jason Kelsey kept playing. There was a chance Jason Kelsey was going to retire last year and Cam Jurgens would have taken over as the starting center then. Cam Jurgens is the starting center on this team. Landon Dickerson is the starting left guard. End of story. I know that like Nick Sirianni kept it wide open. Sirianni loves this idea of competitive advantage. That's you know, every time I say Sirianni, my phone thinks I'm saying Siri. The reality is like, whatever they say, those two spots from where I sit, those are not up for grabs. Dickerson's the left guard. Jurgens is the center. The question is right guard. It stood out to me that Nick Sirianni did not say Tyler Steen. Now, like we said on the show the other day, it's 7:45 in the morning. He's not on a lot of sleep. He's getting questions all over the place. He's trying to think of like who's on the depth chart. And look, it might have slipped his mind, right? But like the fact that they took Tyler Steen high third round last year, if he's that, he should be the front runner. If he's not, and this goes to the second part of the question, I expect if you said to me, Zach, make your bet for what position they're drafting in the first round, it's right tackle with the hope that right tackle has the versatility to play inside early in his career. It's not a necessity. You draft a right tackle to be Lane Johnson's replacement, and you referenced it there where I would kind of push back is it would be ambitious to expect Lane Johnson to start 17 games this year. So that guy might be starting this year, right, when Lane Johnson's out. If they take Amarius Mims or they take Tyler Guyton, that right tackle could be your swing guy and starting if someone goes down. But if you take a right tackle who also has the versatility to play guard for a year or two, then bounce outside, almost like Sean Andrews when they took him, that would obviously be a really good outcome for the Eagles in the first round.
I'm just thinking of a phone program, Sirianni, where you say it and he gives you the five core values, or he yells at Chiefs fans or something like that. That would be, yeah. Look, I think the problem is you can't draft that player over a tackle you'd like more, right? Yeah. Like if the guy just projects to be just a tackle, you have to take that player, right? You're not going for what you think is a worse long-term prospect just because they can slot in at guard. So, it'll be interesting. So let me ask you, what do you think of Tyler Steen? You've been around him. Yeah. Over the past year, how has he kind of handled this idea of not really getting a ton of playing time, even when it was pretty available to him last year, and where the Eagles are on him right now, heading into year two after, like you said, a pretty good investment, top of the third round pick.
Yeah, it was alarming to me when Suo Pettis started over him. Then they put Steen in the lineup. I thought he was inconsistent. I can see that the natural tools, he didn't play guard before, right? He was a tackle. He was a left tackle at Bama. It was a jump moving inside the guard. It's a different position. And that's why you can't just say take a tackle and move him to guard, right? I see people in the chat saying Fuaga you have Fuaga from Oregon State and Fatanu from Washington.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So what I think of Steen, jury's still out on him. You're not expecting a third round pick to be a finished product, but you are expecting the starting left tackle from him from Alabama to like be able to play early. And that was not the case last season. So yeah, I think this is one of these things where I guess we are listening to what they say, because they really didn't say him too much there. But let's watch what they do. If they sign or draft over Steen, then that will be kind of concerning. But look, I remember anecdotally here talking to someone early in Isaac Seumalo's career, someone pretty influential in the organization, who said Seumalo's best role might be your sixth offensive lineman who can kind of step in multiple spots, but maybe not your starter. And then when they drafted Isaac Seumalo, they expected him like potentially to take over for Jason Kelce, but certainly to be a starter. It took Seumalo some time. But by the end of his Eagles career, he was a key player for the Eagles. I mean, if you recall, he got benched in 2017, but sure. Then you think of him, in 2022, he was a key player on a Super Bowl defense. So that's a roundabout way of saying it might take time with Steen, but I don't think there's been enough yet to really have a full conclusion on him. So let's, as we move this along, that was the Steen question from Milner Nersauce. The last offensive line cornerback question, this is offensive line. I will just ask you this. This can be a quick answer. Who is the Eagles week one starter at right guard, Steen, Juergens, or draft pick?
Draft pick.
Yeah, you know what? I'm saying draft pick too. I'm saying a right tackle that they play a right guard week one. That is my pick right now. So we're in agreement there, and that's going
to
be a big topic.
It seems like the Fuaga, the Oregon State kid, he has a chance to be somebody who slots in, great run blocker, that type of guy. So, maybe something like that.
I don't know if he'll be there in the 20s, but that's the thing with the draft. You always say, I don't know how this guy's going to be there. And like Trent McDuffie, Chiefs didn't know he was going to be there. They take him, and he's a key piece of a Super Bowl roster. So before we get to the next line of questions, which is roster building, I wanted to tell you about FOCO. I was at the Eagles game. At the Sixers game recently. We're in the team store with my son, and we're looking at all these products that they have. And he kept kind of picking up these different products in the store. And I look at it, and it's a FOCO product. And of course it's a FOCO product, because FOCO is a leading manufacturer of sports and entertainment merchandise with a product line that includes apparel, accessories, toys, collectibles, novelty items, and more. Best of officially licensed gear for all sports and fandoms. If you're going to a basketball or hockey game, show off your love with team-branded friendship bracelets. Whether it's hoodies, jackets, beachwear, or even overalls, there's something for fans for almost every occasion. FOCO has hooked PHLY up and provided awesome pieces for our studio set. I was watching the Anthony show today, and I saw pieces behind him that were from FOCO. FOCO always has our backs for Philly sports, and they have yours too. Get the best gear around by using the link in our description for all non-presale items. Use the promo code PHLY10 for 10% off. And I also want to tell you about Philly Sports Trips, because I was watching our coverage down in Clearwater, and I saw all those fans there, and I was a little jealous because Philly Sports Trips, that was the PHLY spring training takeover. We worked with Philly Sports Trips then, and we'll have more Philly Sports Trips to come. Be on the lookout for more events throughout the year with Philly Sports Trips. I was on their website the other day, just kind of looking at what their plan is for the Brazil trip. When the Eagles play week one, I mean, they have an awesome itinerary there. And so Philly Sports Trips, we're thrilled to be partnering with them. We're excited for some of the events that are coming up. All PHLY.com/events to learn more and to book your trip. And real quick here, before we get to our next questions, we have a super chat from Shane Hilton, who says, how are you paying number six, $25 million? Plus 11 somebody's going. Okay, so he means 11 AJ Brown. Yeah, I mean, look, they're going to pay Devontae Smith. They love AJ Brown. I think that's not a year one problem. That's maybe like a year three problem, right? They can structure contracts in such a way to alleviate an early cap hit burden. But yeah, look, this is a real thing that we can't ignore. It's something that Cincinnati's dealing with now with T. Higgins, because Jamar Chase is going to get a big deal, right? A.J. Brown is an elite receiver, and he's paid like it. Devontae Smith is playing like an elite receiver, and he's going to get paid like it. So this is something that is certainly worth monitoring for the Eagles. But again, I don't think this is a problem this year or next year. I think it's a problem probably after that. So let's as we roll on here, let's move to the second question of the roster moves, because there's a question about low cost vets. Bo and I did a whole show on low cost vets, and this is a quiet time. I still think the Eagles keep looking to add pieces, but I think any big moves are kind of trade or draft picks. So the second one here, this is from PSU Beatboxer. Percent chance that you guys think the Eagles will move up in the draft at all. Bonus points for naming the team we'd most likely to trade up with and the target players at those higher spots.
So whatever the percent is, I think Howie has shown that he will clearly do that in the first round. If there is a player who he deems is kind of a blue chip possibility and the price is reasonable. I guess the reason I would lower it this time is because both of us said it seems like they're going to go tackle here and maybe try and slot that player at guard. And this is a really deep crop of players. Like they might not have to move up too much. They might move up maybe a couple spots. I have a couple teams here that maybe like the Rams stuck out to me, which is just a few spots ahead of them. Like they have become very comfortable picking later in the draft. Like they haven't had first round picks for a long time. They have Stafford, maybe move back a couple spots. I think New Orleans would be kind of a funny one too, just because the Eagles have their second round pick. They do not have a pick in the third or the fourth round. That could be a possibility. But I just think probably less than 50%, just because I do think there are going to be pretty good tackle prospects there, at their pick. So what do you think?
Yeah, that's good perspective there, because when you're looking to trade up, what you're looking for are teams that have, a dearth of draft inventory, or maybe they're looking at a position where that's not kind of the strength of the draft at that point. Teams typically trade up for quarterbacks, which Eagles obviously aren't doing, edge rushers, which Eagles aren't, well, they they might, who knows, Dallas Turner falls and you jump. Offensive tackle is a position where you would trade up for, and I could see the Eagles doing that. It would surprise me if the Eagles traded up for a corner, although they were looking at doing that in the past, right? And that is a position they would trade up for. I just don't know if any of these corners are the type that you move up for. But if you're saying potential teams, yeah. Well, I also want to say this. Howie will trade up or trade down. I mean, it would surprise me if Howie drafts at 22. And you're saying, why do you say that? He always moves up or moves down. I mean, the last time that he actually drafted in the spot that he was assigned to pick was the Jalen Reagor pick in 2020. 2021, 2022, 2023, they've moved up or they've moved, you know, they've moved up each time. Usually he has a guy that he targets and he moves up to get him. So I would watch out for that. So then what you're looking for are teams that might be on the, like, you know, Cincinnati, for instance. Cincinnati took or they signed Trent Brown, right? They have Orlando Brown on the other side. You're assuming they're not going to take an offensive tackle. That's a team that maybe you're trying to jump Pittsburgh, who could be in the market for an offensive tackle. If you're looking a little higher up, the Saints or the Raiders are teams that are in the market for offensive tackles. If the Broncos don't trade up for a quarterback, maybe they're looking to trade down and get me in and get some draft inventory. So I would say that you look at who's available and you look at who you're trying to jump, because, like, just to give an example, when the Eagles traded to get Devontae Smith, they were jumping the New York Giants. The New York Giants were taking Devontae Smith. So you're kind of this, that's something Howie does a good job at, is he keeps his ear. He keeps his ear to the pulse of the league. I'm going to leave this to you here. I don't want to, I'm sorry to do this to Julia, because I said we're going to do sequentially, but we are in our final 10 minutes of the show and we have a lot of questions. Are there any here that you want to really get in to make sure that like we hit on that? And by the way, Bo, when you listen to the show, this is why it's great doing a mailbag. You have great topics to discuss. People are interested in it. It keeps the conversation moving. So of the remaining ones, we can keep going sequentially, but if there's any that you think we really should hit on from either of these categories, I want to get to that before we wrap up the show.
I have two that are, I think they're the next two actually that I like. That one is kind of more, there's a little more overarching philosophy and kind of leading on your history with the team. And one is just kind of a current issue. And I think the one I would start with is from Rich Green 89. Do you think trading for a corner and extending him would cause issues with Devontae if he doesn't have an extension by then? And Zach, like, you're in the locker room all the time. As someone who has been around Devontae, I have not been. Look, I watch a lot of the locker room clips, but I am curious of your thoughts on this. Like, he seems like an excellent locker room guy, works hard, seems like just a straight shooter. I kind of appreciate that about him, where just kind of tells you like it is, not a ton of drama. When he's played poorly, he takes responsibility for those rare times. But what happens if he, you know, I know they have that fifth year to play with, which is why they might have gone for Dickerson first on the extension. But the longer this goes out, how do you see this maybe affecting him? You know, does it become too big of a storyline? I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, this is an interesting question, because there are two ways of looking at this if you're Devontae, right? Look, Devontae is going to get paid. Like, Devontae doesn't have to worry about that. He's going to get paid. The Eagles would sign Devontae right now, right? I mean, Devontae's going to get paid. From Devontae's perspective, from the Eagles' perspective, Devontae has 2 years left on his deal, right? He has this year and he has the fifth year option. So why would a player sign with 2 years remaining on their deal? It's to get ahead of injury risk, is typically the case. But the other way of looking at it is this: wide receiver contracts don't go down. They're not going down. I know there's this argument. There's so many good receivers in the NFL, or I'm sorry, coming into the draft, that maybe teams aren't going to pay big money for corners because you can keep taking them, and it can almost be like a running back. Elite receivers are going to get paid. And by the way, if you saw free agency this year, like, mid-level receivers were getting paid. But the reason why Calvin Ridley got the deal that he got in part, he's Calvin Ridley. He's a really good player. But also, he hit the open market. And if you hit the open market, you're going to get paid more. There's a risk in getting to the open market. And so if you're Devontae Smith, you say, all right, do I want to sign now and get that certainty? Or do you wait a little bit because Justin Jefferson is going to get paid and Ja'Marr Chase is going to get paid. Someone like T. Higgins, who's on the who's on the tag, he's going to get paid, right? And so the Eagles, like the reason why the Eagles wanted to sign Jalen when they did, Jalen Hurts, that is because you want to get in quickly because the quarterback market keeps going up. The wide receiver market is going to keep going up. And so to answer the question, I don't think if they traded for and signed a corner, it's going to bother Devontae. I think Devontae is going to have to make a business decision that's best for him. And there's not necessarily one way to do it.
Well, and if that's the case, if you frame it that way, and I'm sure Howie knows kind of how the player is thinking about this, then he has a lot of leverage and the Eagles have a lot of interest in getting this done before he even gets close to getting to the market. Like you said, to get that Calvin Ridley type deal, which I got to say, when I saw him get that deal, it scared me a little bit because I was like, oh man, Devontae is about to get paid. It was the first thing I thought of right away. And by the way, Devontae deserves to get paid. Great receiver. Just hope it's in Philadelphia. Okay. Last one. Lots of free agent additions. This is from Steve Kleff, by the way. Mm-hmm. Some of those free agent additions are here because they bring attitude, but with fewer vets to set the tone, will the team gel and succeed? Attitude was missing in 23, but so was discipline and follow through. And this is my favorite part of the framing from Steve. Will it be like 2012 or 2017? And Zach, you've seen these years. Like, I think the framing of this, in both of those years, the Eagles went heavy on free agents and the hype was super high in 2012, less so in 2017. There was, I think people thought they were going to win the division that year. They had a chance to be pretty good. They did not know kind of how spectacular that season was going to go. Yeah. So I guess like looking back on those two teams and looking back at kind of how those free agents fit in, why did one of those teams work out? Why did the other one flop spectacularly? And kind of what lessons can the Eagles learn moving forward from both of those seasons?
Yeah, good question. And thanks for picking this one out. And just, I'm assuming this was referring to 2011 and not 2012. 2011 was the dream team year. 2012, they added, D'Amico Ryans via trade, but it wasn't like the influx of veterans. 2011 is very noteworthy here. 2011 was an odd year. You had the lockout. You had all these signings like during camp. You had a new defense. Like there was a lot going on that year. But what I also point to was Michael Vick got hurt that year and Michael Vick was inconsistent that year. And so look, it's kind of cliche to say the difference is good quarterback play. But yeah, 2017, the Eagles got really high-level quarterback play from Carson Wentz. And there were a lot of other things that went into place. And so if you want to say like, all right, so let's focus on the free agency part of it. One thing that I think the Eagles thought was beneficial that year was they were getting criticized going into the year for having these guys on one-year deals. Like Alshon was on a one-year deal, and it was almost – I think the term maybe like mercenary might have been used from some people in the media, but the Eagles actually viewed it differently. Like they're like, no, we have really highly motivated people here. We have guys who are taking these deals and it's a chance to kind of reset their value, to prove their worth to the league. And you saw that. And so what you want is you want like talented, motivated people. And that's a big factor. You don't want guys who are like, just happy to get paid. You want guys who have something to prove, but whenever you sign free agents, there are different dynamics at play. There's personality dynamics, there's scheme dynamics. And that's up. Those are our questions here. I think the attitude thing, there is something there, especially with CJ Gardner-Johnson, right? Devin White. The Eagles wanted some of that swagger back on defense. But the Eagles didn't sign those guys for that reason. They signed those guys because they're talented, right? I mean, I could bring competitive zeal. They're not going to sign me. So that's a way of saying that ultimately these signings are going to be, you know, the Eagles look for a certain age range with these guys. They weren't signing guys in their 30s outside Devontae Parker, who didn't cost them anything. Saquon Barkley, Devin White, Bryce Huff, CJ Gardner-Johnson. These are guys in the primes of their careers. And Saquon might be kind of fighting a workload curve, but still 27 years old. So I view that as look, if Bo was on air right now, he might talk about kind of the, maybe some of the dream team vibes. I think that having the offseason in place can certainly help, but ultimately it's going to come down to Jalen Hurts. Like, if Jalen Hurts plays at a high level this year, the Eagles are going to be really good. If Jalen Hurts struggles, whether in this new scheme or in just in general, like if he's inconsistent, if he's turning the ball over, if he's not Jalen Hurts, then they're going to be an inconsistent football team. And when I look at 2011, there's a lot of things you can take away from the dream team year. Michael Vick did not play as well in 2011 as he did in 2010, and that was a big part of it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I also think, just thinking back to that 2017 team too, they got great quarterback play from Wentz, but those guys definitely fit into the culture for quote unquote mercenaries. Like getting Chris Long, I think, was a big deal at that point. And then they got lucky in some ways, right? Like, do you remember, I will always remember covering training camp in 2017, and Patrick Robinson was getting roasted every single day. And he was the outside corner at that point, right? And Wentz was throwing a Torrey Smith and Alshon. They were just throwing balls over his head every single practice. They bump him in to slot corner eventually, and he's terrific there. And he makes one of the biggest plays of the year eventually against the Vikings in the NFC Championship game. So, like, some of it is a little bit of luck as well. But, like, look, I agree with you. This is this whole thing. Like, they have improved some of these positions. I like some of the moves they've made. But it always comes down to the quarterback, right? And if Jalen Hurts plays like he did 2 years ago, I'm sure all of these guys are going to, a lot of these guys, particularly on the offensive side, are going to look like really good free agent signings. And, you know, that's what it is.
Well, this has been fun today. I'm sorry that we didn't get to all these questions. I'll tell the viewers, tune in tomorrow. Rich and I are doing the show again. We have some fun opening day themes to the show. But if we have some time late in the show, we'll get to some of these questions, because I appreciate everyone contributing them and watching. This was a fun show today, but make sure you check it out tomorrow before the Phillies game, when we'll get into our favorite, or our most memorable, I should say, more than favorite, most memorable opening days in Eagles history. Might even compare player for player, Eagles to Phillies, and whatever else is on our minds going into the weekend. So for Rich Hoffman, we have Julia Hoff in the studio. I'm Zach Berman. Thanks for watching. Bo will say, as always, we love you. I will say, we'll do better tomorrow. We all silly like the mayor.